Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all these skills to address the subjects that we grapple with in this conversation with a reluctant therapist. Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon, Tyler. You know, it's funny. I was at a party last week and was chatting with this woman, and she said, I listened to your show, and I love when you say eavesdropper. It makes me laugh every time because I don't know if anyone would really admit that as part of who they are. And I said, yes, I own that very much, because some of the best conversations I've ever had were when I was eavesdropping on someone else's and then jumped in and ended up having kind of this like fun banter.
So. The younger generation would call that creeping.
Probably, yes. I am in many ways creeping. Anytime you talk to a stranger, I think for the younger generation is creeping.
Yeah.
They're so not used to having any interactions.
My niece used a new one today, something about flex. I don't know what it means, but she said
either.
She was on her flex. Well, what are we off to today?
Okay. So some weeks I leave the show, and as soon as I get to the car, I start, you know, replaying the show in my head. And then I think, oh, I forgot to say this, or, ooh, I wish I hadn't said that, you know, kind of the evaluation. And I left last week's show when we talked about mantras and our vibrations and calming our, you know, monkey minds so that we can be more healthy, less depressed, less anxious, more focused in our bodies. And I thought, you know, I need to revisit a little piece of that show because I talked about mantras and actually the work of repeating a statement over and over as a way of kind of calming that default mode network that I talked about. You know, that default mode network is that part of our mind that's active all the time, that part of us that's self-reflecting and thinking about what we just said and worrying if we said the right thing. And we get to that space, that default mode network, whenever our mind is wandering or we're daydreaming, but it can become really chaotic and keep us spun up and can, you know, keep us from really being creative or feeling settled. And so to override that kind of default mode in our brain and to calm it down, this idea of using kind of this mantra or a chant, and it doesn't have to be Om or a traditional mantra term. The research actually shows that finding any calming word or sound can have that vibrational calming effect, because it's really about the vibrations of the sounds we make when we, you know, vocalize, whether it's singing out loud or chanting something or humming. It vibrates in our upper palate, it vibrates in our throat and our tongue, and that motion, that vibrating, kind of calms our mind, and it also takes that chaotic busyness in our head and takes it another direction. It kind of shuts off that spinniness. So I wanted to revisit the simplicity of doing that. Really is just allowing yourself to kind of get comfortable. You don't have to have a special pillow. You don't have to have a special place that you go. It can be anywhere that you're comfortable, sitting on your couch, sitting in your car. You know, I quite often get home at the end of the day and my car is really comfortable and it's warm. And so I'll sit there for a long time after the day and just kind of process and maybe listen to music or kind of get myself centered. So just find a place that you're comfortable to sit. And then whatever the word is that comes up to you, it can be a humming sound. It could be Om. It could be stress. It could be peaceful. It can be anything. It could be your child's name. It could be kind of a ha, 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 ha. Anything that brings kind of this smile to your face or a vibrational sense to you, you get to choose it. It doesn't have to be anything specific. It can be a part of a song, you know, that you get an earworm about that keeps playing back and back in your head, and this little stanza. And then just allow yourself on the inhale to say the word or hum the phrase or vibrate a little, whatever the vocalizing is. And then on the exhale, do the same thing. You inhale that mantra and you exhale that mantra, whatever it is. And then you kind of let yourself get into that rhythm. And if your mind starts to get noisy and, you know, start noticing other things or your phone is buzzing, notice the noise, notice the thing that's trying to grab your energy, and then gently bring yourself back to focusing on inhaling the thought, inhaling the vibration, exhaling the vibration. And the real work of helping us settle that default mode network is in how often we gently notice our distraction and then come back to doing the action of the mantra, the humming, the hmm, or the om, or the whatever the song is that's in your mind at that time, and just stay with it consistently enough so that the distractions become less and you're really just in that inhalation, exhalation rhythm. So that's what I left feeling like I left out last week. And it felt like a really great time to bring it back up, because we've been focusing the last few weeks on dealing with loneliness and how to get more connected to the world outside of us, and then how to get more connected to the world inside of us. And because Friday is the winter solstice, and it's a great time for a reset. It's the shortest day of the year in the Northern Hemisphere. There's a lot of religious traditions around kind of trying to bring the sunlight back at that time. But there's also the tradition of going into the dark and really embracing kind of that dark space, getting to the root of what's going on in your heart and your mind. And coincidentally, eating lots of root vegetables, which are about this season, eating those stews, those things that calm our nervous system, that make us feel grounded. And then to really get into the routine of consistency and predictability, which are associated with traditions. And traditions are those rituals and beliefs and stories and activities that we pass from one generation to another to help connect our history, connect ourselves to our ancestors, to create a sense of connection in the moment, and to build connections moving into the future. And so when we look at moving into this holiday time, the winter solstice, the darkest days, the new year with the opportunity to kind of reset for the year ahead, this might be a great time to give yourself like a 2-week challenge, that for this 2 weeks of the holidays between, you know, Christmas and New Year's, even if it's a whole 2 weeks, say, I'm going to sit for a minute or two. It doesn't have to be 10 minutes. It doesn't have to be an hour. Really, if you just sat for a minute or two, you can even set your alarm. So I'm going to inhale and exhale a mantra for 1 or 2 minutes every day for the next 2 weeks. And I'm going to participate in some sort of tradition, either family tradition or create a tradition or go to a traditional holiday event, maybe midnight mass or some solstice event, and kind of settle myself in a way that I can feel more grounded and eat those root vegetables too, because they really are good for our well-being. And so I thought today, to inspire kind of this 2-week challenge, we would talk about traditions and why they're important to us and why they exist, and what kind of traditions are special for you and your family. Because I think even if we don't recognize them, everyone's families have some sort of traditional things that they do. And if you don't feel like you have traditions, then this is a great time to maybe institute something, because traditions are the backbone of the family system. They're the backbone of our culture, but they're the backbone of the family system. And you can really look back and actually find the starting point when families or relationships started to dissolve or disintegrate, at about the time when families stopped participating in traditions or let traditions go or didn't value the traditions. And in marriages, when couples stop doing their date night or they don't make time to spend alone together or continuing that like tradition or ritual of connecting with each other every night. If you go back, you can pinpoint for families and couples, those who let go of these traditions end up really struggling with connection and feeling like they have something meaningful. So think about those traditions. And I have a few family traditions. The one that got me thinking about today's show was our annual Christmas card. And for 30-something years, for almost the entirety of my marriage, I have taken pictures from the entire year and then scanned those pictures in a collage and made a print of the collage. It was much more challenging 25 years ago to do it than it is today. But it still takes a lot of work to go through the whole year's pictures and decide which ones and then make that collage and then take a scan or a picture of it and get the prints, because I'm also dealing with very opinionated children who now want to have a say over which pictures go on the collage. And usually someone's unhappy with something that is on the collage. But If you check out our Instagram page, Elizabeth_TRT, there is a proof, a picture of this year's Christmas card. If you want to check it out. But I find myself each year struggling more and more to have the energy to get this Christmas card together, especially because I'm busier than I feel like I was when I was younger and home with the kids. But also it's, I want it to be meaningful, and it takes time to sit down and make it meaningful. And I want to write a personal note on each one. And I find myself having a harder and harder time getting motivated to do it. Having said that, yesterday I devoted to getting that card done, and I came home after getting it printed and I had the cards, because then I have to attach the photo to all of the cards and write my note. I felt like I had really completed something great, and it also made the year start to feel, or this part of the year start to feel special. It's like finishing the card last night kicked me into this place of now I'm ready to settle in to the holiday season and really be more intentional. So that's the thing that kind of set me into the mode of the traditions. But my good friend Jennifer Blomfield, who I've known now for, I was trying to do the count of how long we've been friends.
18 years.
A long time, yes, at least 15. One of the things that I've admired most about my friend Jennifer, one is she's a phenomenal person and an actress and a singer and also a licensed marriage and family therapist and a teacher at Mission. But she's a phenomenal mom when it comes to creating traditions and magic in her family. And for all the years that I've known you, almost seems like every time we call and check up, you're either making a gingerbread house around Christmas with your grandchild, or you're hand painting Russian Easter eggs that you've blown and created at Easter time, or that you're hanging something up for Mardi Gras, you're creating costumes for Halloween. Like, you have devoted yourself to really creating the space of tradition and honoring ritual and honoring the magic of the season. So I wanted you to come in today to share some of the traditions in your family. Mm-hmm. And why they're special and important, and then hopefully inspire others to call in and talk about their traditions. So that's where we're going today. We're going to be talking about the importance of traditions, why we need to spend time creating them, why they matter to our mental health and well-being. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. We'll be opening up the phone lines in a bit at 805-781-3875. You can find me on my Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. As I mentioned, our Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. You can send me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com and listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. Or please, if you have time, podcast our show, leave a review, and you'll have those podcasts sent to your device week after week, and you can be part of the community. So as always, I look forward to seeing where the conversation takes us. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
That I can tell you in one word. Tradition! Because of our traditions, we've kept our balance for many, many years. Here in Anatevka, we have traditions for everything. How to sleep, how to eat, how to work, how to wear clothes. For instance, we always keep our heads covered and always wear a little prayer shawl. This shows our constant devotion to God. You may ask, how did this tradition get started? I'll tell you. I don't know. But it's a tradition. And because of our tradition,
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and that's Tevye's wisdom from our family favorite musical, Fiddler on the Roof, and the song Tradition, talking about that that balance that we try to maintain in our culture and in our communities and our family. And one of the lines in the song is that without traditions, our lives would be as shaky as the fiddler on the roof. Thank you for being on my show today, Jennifer Blomfield.
Well, I'm thrilled to be here, and I love that you chose that song. Growing up in Alaska and living in a small island that was originally a Russian settlement, those traditions, the pogroms, the whole Russian thing, brings such joy to me because not only was it part of my culture, but I also got to play the part of Hoddle.
Did you?
In a production in, oh my gosh, I'm trying to think back when that was. Many years ago when I was probably 28, 29. So it's a beautiful musical.
So let's talk about the traditions in your family and why they've been important to you and what are some of the traditions. Because when I was looking at, you know, the research about traditions, and you and I are both therapists, so we talk in this language a lot, is that we're constantly trying to find ways to build continuity for families, to give them a sense, especially children, predictability, because our lives can be chaotic and things can happen. There can be a loss, a devastation, a traumatic event, losing a house, a fire, a natural disaster. And if families can continue with the traditions that they have, having dinner together each night, even if it's on paper plates outside, or still celebrating the holidays with grandma's favorite dish, even though grandma's no longer here, that by continuing of those traditions, we create a sense of safety and belonging for our children. And then we also give ourselves the sense that no matter what's happening, life continues on, that traditions remind us that we're part of a long history and that we're moving forward, whether it's the traditions of our country or the traditions of our family. So what are some traditions that have been grounding or helpful for you?
Well, the beautiful thing about family traditions is they set that foundation. And even when you grow up and marry and have your own children and you develop other traditions, it's that really early childhood memories of being a part of a family. And growing up in a family with nine children, we always had very, very specific family traditions. For one reason, we didn't have enough money to go out to dinner. So everything was done as a family in the home. And because there was always a newborn baby, a toddler, and a three-year-old, there was always that at Christmas time. We couldn't have a traditional tree with glass ornaments. So our tradition was everything was edible.
Now that's, on the tree?
Yes. So we had an edible tree before it was trendy. But our edibles were tangerines and Swedish rosettes dipped in powdered sugar. We would make all fresh cookies and tie ribbon around them and put them on the tree and candy canes. And the only artificial thing we had on our tree was that old-fashioned thing called tinsel that nobody uses anymore.
It's probably toxic, that's why.
But even with that tradition, there was so much chaos Christmas morning with all the presents, that the other tradition was as soon as presents were open, my father would gently go to that tree, pick it up by its base, and throw it out the front window.
Really? So just to signal that Christmas was over?
It was over because it was always a mess. And of course, we were always in the tree eating everything that we made. So it became a laughing joke for many years that, yeah, that's how we knew that we were getting ready for the new year instead of Christmas.
So how did you carry forward then when you had your own children? Which traditions did you bring with you from your childhood?
Well, of course, the Christmas dinner was always very important. And we all, as children, we would help my mother cook. And I love entertaining and I love cooking. So I took her love and her beautiful tutorials of teaching me how to cook well. And so in our family in Kodiak, I lived in that little Russian town, we would always have beef Wellington. We would still do all the edibles on the tree. And then I did pass a new tradition of embroidering satin ornaments. And so I did that for many, many years. But the dinner was the big one. And we would always make Bailey's Irish cream truffles. And it was just the other piece of it was corn husk dolls on the tree. Everything was handmade. And then later on, of course, we would buy things. But it wasn't until my children were pretty much grown. Everything else was handmade by myself or by the kids.
And so one of the things that I mentioned about traditions, why they're so important, is that they give families a sense of continuity in times of trauma or loss or grief. And your children's father died when they were quite young. And so how did, you know, the traditions, how were you able to hold them together? What kind of traditions did you use to kind of help maintain?
Well, my children grew up in the theater. Their father would sometimes be gone 4 to 8 months out of the year on a fishing boat. And my life was in the theater. I had a dance school, and I was very involved in community theater. So we were a gypsy family. And so when we were home, we were still doing that, singing and dancing. We had this beautiful log house that my husband built by hand. And before he died, he had started a new addition. And the home was a hexagon. So he had built a second hexagon, all with logs and with his center beam. And he never finished the room. So we had this massive, huge room. And each side had an enormous window. So imagine yourself in this snow globe made of logs. And outside these windows would be the snow falling. And so at night we would put giant candles in each window, and we would dance around the center pole. And it turned out to be a tradition, but it was just something that we all loved to do. And my three daughters are all professional dancers and were with companies. So it was just a natural thing for us to do. And my sister was studying different religions, and she had sent us a CD of the Sufi love dance. So one of our favorite traditions was to be in that room at night and dance to this beautiful music. And we had someone spend the night one night, and as we would dance, we would get warm, and it was an all-girl family, so we would shed our clothes. And I'll never forget when the young girl that spent the night went home and said, yeah, we danced naked at Jennifer's house. And I'm still a very good friend with her as a grown adult and with her parents, so I must say that caveat.
Well, and what's interesting about traditions, because we tend to look at them as what we do at the holidays, that, you know, what are their traditions, what foods do we eat, how we decorate the house. But there are the traditions, the daily traditions and rituals that kind of ground us, like reading a book before bed and, you know, having dinner together. But then this kind of this tradition of dancing, because my family, I would think that I resonated with that, that there's kind of this, if music goes on, everyone starts to move. A group of us start to move. And then the non-dancers, usually the guys in the family, mm-hmm. can they sit back and, you know, watch and pretend that, oh, I'm not a dancer. But someone's always moving in some way. And that movement, kind of that, if you acknowledge that that's what you do as a family, that's the gift that you hand down to your children, so that they, it doesn't have to be a formal how we decorate the tree or, you know, what we do. It can be something as informal as when music plays, our family gets up and dances. Mm-hmm. And if you tell your children, this is who we are, this is something we do, that's all it takes to create a tradition, is the intentionality and acknowledging it's a tradition. It's something that defines who we are as a family. Because when we talk about traditions, we're really talking about how we pass down our values, our beliefs, and morals as people. And it's in our actions that we pass down those values, beliefs, and morals. And so I imagine that getting up and dancing in the dark of the night when you may not feel like it, especially once their dad passed away, the reminder was we dance even when we're sad. Mm-hmm. Dance gives us hope. Or what were you thinking?
And we continue to dance with joy. I have a 7-year-old grandson, and ever since he was, you know, old enough to stand up, the music was on. And so we always dance. And for a while there, when he was living with me, we'd wake up every morning, and there's this, I think it's called Go Noodle. It's an app where they teach you these little dances, and they do it in the schools. So we'd wake up every morning and pick a dance, and that's how we'd start our day. So, and he now is obsessed with all the Fortnite moves, like all the little kids are. And obviously he doesn't play the game, but he is well-versed on all of the dances, and he can do them. And it's amazing to watch. So,
And so there is that ancestral tradition that you're passing mm-hmm. on, is that joy of movement. So let's talk about some of the other intentional traditions that you've created or rituals. If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest is Jennifer Blomfield. We're talking about traditions and how traditions in our families and our homes are essential to our mental health and well-being. Because when we have intentional traditions that we look forward to and we consistently do, because you can have a tradition that you acknowledge, but if you don't follow through on it, if it's not consistent, it's really not a tradition. The mental health benefits come from having something that happens routinely, so much so that it becomes something that the family can count on. So when there are losses or traumas or sadness, even in those times, everyone can count on still having lasagna on Christmas Eve, or we know we're going to play Boggle together, whatever that thing is. If that stays consistent, that gives everyone in the family a sense of things will be okay, even though they don't feel okay right now. And so I'd love to know what some of your family traditions are, or things that you do to help ground your family or give you a sense of identity. 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of our conversation. So I called the other day and you were making gingerbread houses.
Yes.
All right. So what are some of the other magical things you do to kind of create a sense of identity in your family?
Well, we always practice the Dia de los Muertos, you know, after Halloween. At Easter, we hand blow eggs, and then we do that the traditional Russian painting with wax. And we make stuff up. We just, we're always doing some craft project, or this year it's snow globes. We're all making snow globes and finding something special about each person and putting them in that snow globe. So I don't know, it's pretty organic how we create these things.
So creating is more the tradition than actually a specific creation itself, but the act of...
Right. Well, and I'll give you a beautiful example of a ritual that we did after their father died. So he was cremated, and I had left his ashes in the mortuary for almost a year, and someone said, you have got to bring Tom home. So we brought him home, and I had gone to the store and bought these little red cloisonné heart boxes. And so I took each child to a bead store, and I said, I want you to choose a charm that represents you and something you did with your father that you treasured so much about him. And we put those in the little cloisonné heart box and added his ashes and then wrote intentions, and then we super glued it. And that was 27 years ago, and my girls still take it out every year on the anniversary of his death, and it's a beautiful celebration. We always have seafood, and we usually do something if we're all together. But it was those little boxes that kept him and them still united. Mm-hmm. And those are rituals as a therapist that I do with people, because it's something you can hold on to. It's creative, and it's something that you own. Mm-hmm. So that's an example.
Well, and I like, too, that the creating of the hearts was one piece of it, but then the tradition became, we, in honor our dad, honor Tom, we pull the box out, we have a moment, that meaningful mm-hmm. reconnection. Because again, there are some steps to traditions and to rituals that are important to follow, because if we want to get the mental health benefits of doing the tradition or having a ritual, we have to kind of follow these steps of acknowledging what we're doing, saying, oh, it's Christmas and here's how we honor it, or we've lost a loved one, we're going to acknowledge their loss. You have to acknowledge what it is you're going to celebrate or make a tradition around, or why you're doing that. And then you have to kind of create the action of what it is that you do. For you, it was creating the box. And then years later, it was having seafood and pulling it out and having a meaningful kind of time of reflection.
Yeah, and even if you don't have the object in hand, mm-hmm. every year you have that memory.
Yes.
And no matter where my girls are, you know, one's in Taiwan right mm-hmm. now, one's in LA, one's in Alaska in Dutch Harbor as we speak, but they'll call and say, hey, we had oysters tonight in honor of Dad. You know, and it's always that moment that is that we're celebrating, mm-hmm. and the sadness dissipates because it becomes a celebration.
And then when it comes to like our favorite holiday traditions, I think, well, I guess from my own experience, you know, what changes is that when my family grew and the traditions I loved growing up with my brother and sister, and then I had my own family, and we would still kind of do the celebration with my parents and my brother and sister. But now that I'm a grandmother and, you know, my brothers and sisters have families, it makes it more of a challenge to kind of maintain that tradition. And a lot of families, I think, start to kind of lose that sense of connectedness. If we can't all gather or we don't have that time, then we start to lose that identity as a family. So what's really helpful is to talk about whether, you know, the beauty of email or the beauty of even just writing Christmas cards. It doesn't have to, you know, you can make it more personal. You can do stuff if you have a family text account or a text chain, to talk about the things you're doing that are traditional from your childhood, and to remind each other, remember when we did this, or remember how much fun it was. We did the lasagna with our family this year, and I thought of you. And I, even if we can't be together as the group doing these traditions we remembered as children, when you bring them into your adult life in a new form and you carry them on, it still connects you to all the people that you grew up with.
And you pass on those recipes. Yes. Everyone has that traditional recipe of a holiday meal. And like when my kids were grown and gone, they would call me and say, now, how did you make this? And they're making it for their families and their friends. And that's how we don't lose the essence of where we came from.
Right. And it goes back to the idea of identity and self, mm-hmm. sense of belonging, sense of security. You know, all the things that we talk about not having in our culture today, where people talk about feeling lonely or isolated or struggling with anxiety or depression, and we think it's some mystical reason why we're struggling with this, and or people, you know, want to put it in, it's a biological reason that we're feeling lonely or anxious or depressed. But really, if you got down to the nitty-gritty, what we're all feeling is this desire to feel a part of something bigger than ourselves. Or what we're feeling is this sense of disconnect from something that makes our life feel like it has meaning. And so although it may seem just kind of silly or too simple, it's those silly, simple things that make us feel alive.
Well, and they are the memories. And when you have a positive memory, it becomes a tradition because it's something you want to carry on. And that's what holidays do for us.
And then for people who might be saying, because we work in the mental health field, for the people who say this is the loneliest, saddest time of my life, I don't have those memories, I don't have those traditions, therefore I want to retreat or have nothing to do with this. You know, my argument always is, but then it's on you to create something to go forward with, because to continue having the story of I'm sad, lonely, depressed, unhappy at this time of year because I had a horrible childhood, no memories, nothing to look forward to, the only way you change that story is to then write a new one.
Oh, absolutely. You can always start a ritual of your very own. Mm-hmm. And often if it's something that gives you joy, then you want to share that with other people. I don't know who came up with this, but I saw it in a store a couple years ago called Flying Wish Paper.
And okay.
It's this very thin, thin paper. I'm thinking it's rice paper. It's whatever tea bags are made out of. And you write your intention or your prayer on it, and then you crumble it up. And then you uncrumble it, and then you wrap it around your finger so it's a cylinder.
Okay.
And because this paper is so fine, when you light it, it slowly burns down. You see this beautiful ember, and then it flies up in the air. And you can do it in a home. It dissipates so quickly that it's not something that would start a forest fire. But it's a tradition that I've started now with my grandson, and he loves it. I mean, it's a nice ritual before bedtime. It's a great thing to do on a birthday or a celebration.
A time of letting go. And I love the New Year's opportunity to kind of reset for the coming years. In our family, we write a letter to ourselves about how this year was, and then you open the letter from the year before on
yes.
New Year's Eve, and you get to read it. So not everyone will journal, but if you just write a letter once a year to yourself about what this year was, the next year you get to open it and see where you were. But then also we write down things that you want to let go from the year, things that you weren't too happy about or things that were unpleasant or painful. You write them, and then we kind of burn them and let them go into the world, to start creating this sense of continuity, intentionality, something to look forward to, something people can count on. Like if you grew up with none of those, then it's just one simple thing that you can do that will change the course of your life. Whether it's, you know, maybe going to a restaurant for dinner, and maybe Christmas Eve you choose a different restaurant. Some families go to a movie on Christmas Eve or Christmas morning. And when my daughter got married, and she and her husband and my granddaughter spend Christmas with the in-laws in Georgia, that changed all of our mm-hmm. family Christmas. And the first Christmas, I spent a lot of time in my pajamas on the couch feeling really sorry for myself. It was incredibly painful yeah. and sad. It was like the ending of something that had been so special. But over the course of the last couple of years, we've redefined our traditions. We didn't just let them go, but we've had to take the time to create things that feel meaningful and special. And that takes some effort. You know, it's kind of easy to say, well, that's over and it's never going to come back again, and wallow in the sadness of the loss. But then at some point you have to intentionally make new. Like I imagine you had to with the girls after Tom died over the, you know, course of the next 20 years, you had to create new traditions that were about you and the girls.
Yes. Yeah, and that was easy because we were all girls, so yeah. we were all dancers. So there was just so much activity at the theater that, and I remember my eldest daughter got in trouble in high school, as all high school kids do, and I said, "Well, you're not going to dance this week," and she was devastated because she said, "Mother, that's what holds me up," and I realized that taking something away that is therapeutic, which what the arts are, as we all know, was the worst thing I could do. So I grounded her, and we went and got a pedicure.
That's a great parenting, Jen.
No, I'm a terrible parent because whenever my kids were grounded, we would do something fun. And especially when they're teenagers, because they don't want to hang out with the parental unit. So, yeah.
So the punishment was hanging out with you.
With
but
me,
you ended
yes,
up having fun.
Yes. But we'd actually have a great time. And
well, and we talk about traditions too. It's things that are important to us, like football teams, you know, people who are sports fans. There's a lot of traditions around wearing the jersey on
yes,
game day uh-huh. or having special foods on game day, or, you know, whatever the traditions were at the university you went to. You know, the different schools during finals week have different things that happen. And that gives the school a sense of identity. My daughter went to UCLA and they did an undie run where everyone during finals week runs in their underwear somewhere. I'm glad we part of the tuition there, but it gave the school, you know, it's kind of something that you participate because you're part of that group. And, you know, football fans or any sports fans, when everyone, you know, waves the banner or the flag, it gives everyone a sense of being part of that group, that tradition mm-hmm. of doing it. We have traditions, religious traditions, of course, and the way we do things as a group identify us as being part of that group. But I think the important part is, do we understand and recognize when we're participating in those traditions, like our culture tradition? Why do we stand during the playing of the national anthem? That's part of our identity as American citizens. It's a respect thing that we do, that we stand up when this is played. And we don't question why, we just do. Because then that says, I believe in this and I share this belief with all the people here. But things like high tea in the afternoon, you know, that way that we bring our cultures together. So this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We're talking about traditions, and I'm curious to know, what are yours? What are the things that you look forward to? Whether it's your sports traditions, do you wear a special jersey? You know, do you tap your shoe 3 times before you hit a golf ball? Or do you have traditions in your home? Or are you looking for traditions? Because Jennifer and I always have ideas. Our number is 805-781-3875. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back to take your calls. Hank Williams Jr. and family tradition. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and with my friend Jennifer Blomfield, and we're talking about traditions. And let's add, when we talk about traditions, you know, they include rituals and customs and things that we do to pass down our values, our beliefs, our morals from one generation to another. And there can be fun, silly traditions. I talked about, you know, sports traditions in university. There are very serious religious traditions. There are family rituals and traditions, how we honor death and birth and weddings and birthdays and first day of school. But then there are some personal rituals that we can participate in that can help us develop a greater sense of connection, not just to ourselves, but to the world. And I know that you are a lover of ritual of all kinds. Do you mind sharing a couple of the rituals that you, because I know that you went to Mexico to participate in some rituals, and you've participated in a lot of native rituals in Alaska.
Yeah, growing up in Alaska, when I was having my after I'd grown up and had children, there was such a huge, I'm just going to say it, alcoholism and incest mm-hmm. in the native villages. And when the shamans came and said, we need to bring back our traditions, that's when things started to shift. And there was a huge effort to bring back the original, before the Russians came, to go back to their original shamanic rituals, and it really healed so, so many people. So in the late 80s and early 90s, we were all a part of that. You know, here they call them sweat lodges. In Kodiak, they were banyas. And now I know it's super trendy to do ayahuasca, but that stuff was going on in, you know, 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. And it was actually therapeutic, and now there's all these articles written about it that it's coming back. But it's really the intention. It's not we're just going to get high and hallucinate. It's really you're going into a deeper place of intention and of prayer. And I think those rituals are very beneficial if they are done properly. My personal ritual for the last couple years for myself is I had my voice changed. I went through menopause, and I no longer have this beautiful, you know, lyrical. My voice was like honey.
No high sopranos.
And now my voice is a little more like gravel. So I don't sing in public anymore, but I still sing as a form of mindfulness and meditation. And it's basically how you started the show mm-hmm. when you talked about the mantras of the Om. And I am a lover of Hildegard von Bingen, who is an abbess nun in the 15th century. And she was a mystic, and she wrote the most beautiful chants. And most people that study religious music know of her. And so I listen to her a lot. And my new goal as a personal ritual at my age of 63 is to learn those. And as a private thing mm-hmm. and just in my own time of reflection and prayer.
Well, and I think if we think about why it is we're drawn to doing, and last week we were talking about the mantras, and we're back there today because there's so much about kind of, I think this time of year when it's dark at 4:30 and we put on our pajamas, I look forward to that. I'd put them on at 3:30 if it would get dark then. But, you know, being able to settle down with hot tea and the long nights and the stars. And for me, that feels, I feel drawn into myself and this pull to being connected to something greater than my day to day. You know, for some reason, the summers and the springs, you know, the spring are about being light and energetic and out in the world. But this hibernation of the winter time is this going inward. Mm-hmm. And so the connecting to 15th century saints or, you know, the rhythms or history of our lives generations back and thinking about where we're moving forward. Like in a time that everything feels chaotic, we have to create the space of peace because it's not going to come to us. And there's so much encouragement to always stay busy and to be productive and this idea that we need to be winning and always on top of things. It doesn't serve us. It doesn't serve our mental health. And one of the things, I love California, but one of the things I think is a disservice to humans who live in California is that there isn't a forced hibernation that you have in the East Coast or places where it's dark and you know, you can't do anything but be indoors for months at a time. You lived in Alaska for so long. How is that? I know that for a lot of people, it's challenging mentally to be in there.
It was all I knew. I loved it.
Mm-hmm. But do you miss it now that we feel like we should be outdoors 365 days a year? Like, I wonder if we should be having that same rhythm of hibernation and internal work.
Well, it is darker in these last 2 months. So it's not like Alaska where it's dark, 16 hours, which it will be this week. But you wake up differently when, with the daylight savings time. And so I still feel it. I feel it very much.
Do you feel like the sense of wanting to hibernate?
Yeah.
Are you a pajama person at 4:30?
Well, yeah, as soon as that sun sets, I've got my Christmas lights on and candles, and it's a really quiet time because I'm alone now. My kids don't live with me anymore. So I actually love the solitude, which before I hated. But I think that comes with age too. And when you were just speaking about going in hibernation, I invite people to look at their ancestors. And as a family therapist, we know family systems. And your lineage, you cannot deny it. And one of my favorite teachers says, you can move away from your family, but wherever you go, they're going to be there. So what I invite people to do is go back several generations and find those families and what did they do and try to recreate that for yourself as a form of getting still. Mm-hmm. Because they didn't have phones and they didn't have televisions, and they had to find ways of being. And quite frankly, there was probably not that much mental illness back in that time.
Or it was treated differently. The way that we approached someone who would be struggling with what we would term mental illness today was treated differently. It was called melancholia, mm-hmm. which seems much less desperate than chronic, depression or bipolar disorder. Same symptoms. But, when you call something melancholia, then you say, all right, then when someone's in the space, we would treat that differently. They would be surrounded by family. They would be, kind of brought into the fold.
And they were beautiful sanitariums where people could go, like a spa. Now we see so much more anxiety, mm-hmm. and nobody sits still anymore. And that's too bad, because sitting still is where you learn to cope with the anxiety and you can move through it better.
Well, it's interesting that we go there because we are looking at traditions from a mental health standpoint. But yes, there is, when you play a board game with your children or you sing Christmas carols or whatever that time is, you're stringing popcorn and cranberries, it may feel like kind of meaningless tasks or time-filling tasks, but they're actually really essential to building a sense of connectedness and traditions with your children. Every time you sit and have the patience to play Monopoly or Sorry or whatever it is, that hour or two that you're together is building in your child's DNA this sense of place and identity. And so when that child is out in the world as an adult and is struggling with loss or loneliness or frustration, they have the reserves to tap into those years of memories of being able to be still with the family and feeling whole. And then I go back to, if you feel like you came out of a family with no good memories, or it was an abusive household or an alcoholic household, or whatever it was, very disconnected, a family of divorce,
you borrow other people's.
You borrow. And also, mm-hmm. I challenge you even more to look for the story that was okay. Because no family story is all horrible, right? Nothing in life is all bad or all good. Everything in life has a little inkling of something. And if you can go back into your story and parse out that one little thing that was okay, that was positive, maybe it was a book that you look forward to every year or one ornament on the tree. I'm thinking the smallest of things. If you can bring that piece from your history and bring it forward, it gives you that sense of connection, that depth that gives your life groundedness. Because for a lot of people, the reason we struggle with anxiety, depression, loneliness is that we don't feel rooted in anything. We just feel listless or floating without matter holding us to the ground. And so heavy doses of root vegetables and bone broth and stew in the winter and contemplation of, you know, our family history, like all of this kind of darker, getting to the bones activities really serve us in healing ways.
And that's why it's important to bring those back. I mean, mm-hmm. back in the day when we would make bread with yeast and you beat it and beat it and beat it, or my grandmother every year would make taffy with us. And that's a big deal. You're boiling sugar, you got to let it cool, and then you spend hours pulling and pulling and pulling, and then you add the little bit of food coloring, and then you see how the taffy turns into these beautiful ribbon colors. And it that was one of my favorite memories. And then you'd have to put your hands in fresh butter because in order to pull taffy, you've got to have oil all over your hands, and you're pulling. I mean, it's a beautiful, sensual.
Yeah, this tactile.
Oh my
experience.
Gosh, it's so much fun. And then of course you get to eat it, yeah. which is even better. So I think cooking with mm-hmm. with family it brings that, and all of these things bring a sense of well-being. And inclusion,
and it doesn't have to be 24 hours a day. You know, it just can be one time set aside. And I guess I think if you don't have time, I guess this is, you know, a reminder to myself every year when I fight this, I need to do this Christmas card, and it's really time consuming. And why do I spend so much time doing this arts and craft project when I could send my pictures into MPix and let them make mm-hmm. a card? Why do I do this? But then the process of going through the pictures, and I'm thinking about the year, and I'm thinking about my family and how much fun we had together. That's very, very therapeutic.
Well, but I tell you that every year I look forward to getting that in the mail. I love
you.
Your Christmas card, and that is such a lost art.
Well, and just so know that it comes with all the love and energy that goes into it. And I don't do a lot of family traditional foods. I'm not a wonderful cook like you are, but the card, I think, for me is a manifestation of time I've spent thinking about, reflecting on my family story and who we are. And then at the end of that experience, I have this to look back on year after year. Like I take the collage that I've made the print out of and frame it. And so our mudroom is all the years of these Christmas cards. So for my children, when they come home, every time they walk into the mudroom, here's the story of their life and where they came from. And I guess my challenge is, if you're too busy for one traditional activity, one day of game playing, or one afternoon of making bread, or one day of doing this Christmas card, then you need to kind of rethink what you're doing, because being busy all the time doesn't serve our mental health. Taking away time, finding time, stealing time is the most important thing we do. And when we show up in counseling, again, I'm going from both of us as therapists, when people come in and they'll say, I feel restless, I feel bored, I feel unsatisfied, I'm not happy, we need to be happy. And when they start telling the story, most often what's missing from them is any sort of daily tradition or ritual or quiet time or something that they pull away from their day-to-day and are committed to.
Well, and we talk about that in parenting, consistency.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And adults need the same. Yeah. I mean, we need to have something that is the same every day, because it's something we can count on, even if it's just that morning cup of coffee.
Yes.
I mean, whenever
and
we
that's
had to,
a ritual and tradition,
I mean,
people don't
you
recognize.
You have to go get your blood work done and you can't have that morning cup of coffee. It's like, oh my God.
But it's true. And again, it goes back to the intentionality of recognizing all the things that are rituals and traditions, coffee being one big one. People have very specific rituals around that coffee that they start the morning with. And if you were to get up and intentionally say, this is a tradition, this is something I do for me, it actually has great mental health benefits, instead of just crawling into the kitchen to find coffee, to say, no, this is how I start my day. Here's where I spend 10 minutes kind of tasting the coffee and thinking about what I'm going to do today. That in itself is enough to give your mental health a boost. Because you've intentionally said and acknowledged, this is a tradition I do for myself every mm-hmm. day. Or I remember one of my friends who talked about rubbing elbows. Did you do that? Putting cream on their elbows every night? And she talked about, do you do that, Tyler? He just looked at me strange, like, what? But this woman talked about how part of her, she just started to recognize that she was putting lotion on every night kind of mindlessly. But then she said, I'm going to slow down and I'm going to pay attention to what it feels like to put lotion on my elbows, and what my arm feels like, or what my legs feel like, or my face when I'm putting this night cream on every night. And so by the end of that, I've loved my entire self, by thinking about mm-hmm. what a great day it was, and thank you, legs, for, you know, helping me walk. And it took her, she said, it takes me all of 4 minutes, but I go to bed every night having kind of done this ritual.
Well, and it becomes a mindful mm-hmm. meditation.
Yeah.
You know, I work at Mission College Prep, and so I spend a lot of time with the athletes there. And their rituals as athletes are just as mindful and just as beautiful. So we, you know, you and I are more into crafts and arts, but when you look at any human being, it's what they do on a daily basis with intent mm-hmm. that matters, and that is their ritual.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that is, if there's a message for the whole show, it's that you don't need to take more time out and create new things or start to feel badly. And what I don't want you to do is to start feeling like, oh, I failed at life. I don't have any traditions. Don't do that, because this is not a time for beating ourselves up. It's really a time of just taking a moment and saying, what is it that I do every day? What are the things that I already make time for? And then start to recognize them with intentionality as being things that you value, that you believe in, that are part of your morals, because you're doing them every day. There are things you're modeling for your children. And then just start acknowledging, hey, these are traditions I have. These are rituals I have in my day-to-day life, whether it's going for a walk, taking the dog out. We all have them. The difference is taking the time to recognize that they're traditions and rituals, and then that's when they start to have the mental health benefits. Because racing through our lives, doing these things every day, without recognizing what they're doing for us, you're kind of losing out on all this natural therapeutic help you could be giving to yourself. Because I know that every single one of you do things on a daily basis. You're just not acknowledging that they have a ritual benefit to your life. So I think that's where we're going to leave it. Because I don't want anyone to start feeling like, as they go into the holiday seasons, that there's one more task on their plate. No more tasks, but take a moment and think about all the things you already are doing and why they matter to you and why they are of value, and pay attention to them. And then you'll have already instilled these traditions that already exist in your life without having to do any more work or add any more things. And on that note, I'm going to take some time for myself for the rest of the year. The next two Tuesdays, because Tuesday happens to be Christmas Day and the following Tuesday is New Year's Day. So I'm going to spend time kind of reflecting and recharging and building some resolve to go into 2019. So I hope you'll tune in next Tuesday, because we're going to have a guest show on. On Tuesday, we'll be hearing from Nora McInerney. She's the host of Terrible Thanks for Asking podcast, and she's going to be talking with her guests about why the holidays can be a time of happiness or not so happy. And then the following Tuesday on New Year's Day, we'll be celebrating with the Capital Steps. And then I'll look forward to being back with you at the beginning of 2019 to carry on our conversations. As always, you can be part of the conversation by visiting me on my Facebook page or our Reluctant Therapist Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. Send me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Have a wonderful end of the year. Thank you for supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. At the family reunion, telling jokes and playing spades. Uncle Dave is on the barbecue grill. Grandma bragging about the blanket she made for the new baby on her way. Even though the daddy ain't really ready, this child is coming anyway. Yeah, Niecy made her famous potato salad. Somehow it turns out green. Maybe it's all the scallions. Could be.
everybody tiptoeing round.